you were born, though? Or is it when you're, if you're...
No, I meant your parsha, because this week is the parsha of the Bris. Parsha is Lech Lecha. Uh-huh. So...
Sure, I'm confused. First, Bris.
I don't get it.
Then I joked. Sorry. This week's parsha, Lech Lecha.
It was my parsha.
Oh, mazal tov, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah,
birthday.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
So, we met Avram, then the last six parsha. We noticed that Abraham is called Avram. And...
Are we at the beginning of the parsha?
What?
Sorry, at the beginning?
Starting at the beginning. We'll quickly summarize the parsha, and then we'll go through it a little slower. We're doing parsha summary. Summary of the parsha, like on every Tuesday night. And the parsha begins with God telling Avram to leave his homeland and go to a land that God will show him, and there he'll be a great nation and have blessing. Abram goes, he takes all his men with him, he comes into the land of Israel, and God tells him, this land is going to be yours, I'm going to give it to your children. Abram travels in the land of Israel, and then there's a famine. So Abram has to go south to Egypt. When he comes close to Egypt, he recognizes that his wife is exceptionally beautiful, and he tells her, look, they're all going to want you as a wife. So if we want to make it out of there alive, we have to tell people you're my sister, because then things will go smoothly. If we say you're my wife, so they'll kill me and take you. So they do this. They enter Egypt saying that Sarah is Abram's sister. Really, she's his niece, not only his wife. We noticed that last week. But they tell everyone that she's his sister, and everyone's amazed at how beautiful she is, so they take her to, they say she's fit for a king. They bring her to Pharaoh's house, and Abram obviously gets a lot of gifts, being that they think he's this beautiful woman's brother. And God punishes Paro and his household because of the fact that he took Abram's wife. And Paro calls Abram, and he says, what'd you do to me? Why didn't you tell me she's your wife? Why'd you tell me she was your sister? Take your wife, get out of here. And Paro sends guards with him to make sure that no one else takes her for a wife. And they kick him out of Egypt. Avram goes out of Egypt with his wife, Sarah, all the wealth that he had acquired thus far. Sarah's brother, who's his nephew, Lot. And they travel back north to the land of Israel. Now Avram's a very wealthy person. Avram's wealthy, and Lot also got wealthy being with Avram. And now they run into a problem. They're trying to live together, but there's too much wealth. Lot's sheep and Avram's sheep don't have enough pastures. There isn't enough room for them to graze. And they see that their shepherds are getting into fights. So Avram calls Lot over and he says, look, why should we fight? You choose. You want to go east, I'll go west. You want to go west, I'll go east. I won't stay far from you. I'll be close. But let's go our separate ways so that there's enough room for our cattle. And Lot goes and lives with the Sodomites, the Sodomim, which are what today we call Bikata Yalden, the valley by the Jordan, which is very prosperous. It has the waters from the Jordan, the underground waters, the overground waters, and that land flourishes. But the people were very sinful. After Lot leaves, God tells Avram, look around you, north, south, east, west, look around, because everything you see, the land of Israel, it's all going to be yours. And you're going to have children, as many as the dirt on the ground, just as no one could count the dirt, how many pieces of dirt there are, so too, no one will be able to count your offsprings, your children. Now I want you to travel the land, travel its length, travel its width, because all of the land is going to be yours. And Avram starts traveling. Now there's a war. Four major kings attack five major kings. It seems like the five major kings had been subservient to the four major kings. And at some point they said, hey, enough, we don't want to pay taxes. And they rebelled, and for 12 years nothing happened. And on the 12 years they were subservient, on the 13th year they rebelled. And on the 14th year, the four kings said, hey, enough is enough. And they came back to take him over. Now, the five kings that had been subservient, one of them was the king of Sodom and the king of Amorah, which is where Lot is living. So when the four kings attack, they destroys Sodom, Amorah, and other three kingdoms, and they take captives, and one of the captives is Lot. And when Avram hears that his nephew Lot, his brother-in-law Lot, has been captured, so he starts a chase, he runs after them, he attacks, and he defeats all four kings, and he frees his brother, and he frees the Sodomites, and he frees all the captives. And when the king wants to give him part of the wealth, he says, I don't want anything, you're not going to make me rich. God promised me I'll be rich, I don't want you to say, oh, it's because of me Avram was rich. I don't want anything. But the people who helped me, they should get, and I'm also giving a tenth to God. But I don't want anything. Now God appears to Avram, and he tells him, I'll be your protector, and you have a lot of reward coming. And Avram says, what reward can I get if I'm if I have no child? All my wealth, what's it worth? The one who's running my house after me, it seems, is going to be my chief servant, Eliezer. And God tells him, no, don't worry, Eliezer is not going to be the one to inherit you. You're going to have a child. Avram is 75 years old, at least. I don't know if we'll get to it today, the discussion about when all of this is taking place. And Avram might have been 99 years old at this point. Avram's an old man, so is his wife Sarah. Sarai at this point. And he believes God. God tells him, you're going to have children. Come on out. Let's look at the stars. Count the stars. He can't count the stars. That's how your children are going to be. And he believed in God. And that was considered a righteous moment for Avram. And God tells him, I'm the one who took you out of your father's land. And I took you out of there to give you this land to inherit. And Avram asks for a sign. And here we have the Bris, the famous treaty that God does with Avram, where they take three young goats and three young rams and three young ayel, whatever they translate it, and two pigeons, two different types of pigeons, and they cut them up, and then they make a treaty. And God tells him, you should know that your offsprings are going to be strangers in a foreign land. They're going to be geirim. They're not going to be one of the citizens. And they're going to be tortured. And all this is going to take place for 400 years. And then the fourth generation is going to return to this land, and then you'll inherit the land. And they'll come back wealthy. And there's the treaty. Sarah, Avram's wife, sees that she's not having kids. So she tells Avram, look, I have a Mitri, an Egyptian maid, do me a favor, marry her, maybe from her I'll have children. And Avram listens to his wife, and they live together. The second she becomes pregnant, Hagar, she starts looking at Sarah and saying, boy, she must not be such a righteous person. I was with Avram for a short time, and whoa, just like that, I got pregnant. And her, look at how many years she was with Avram, nothing doing. Must be that she only looks like a righteous person. Deep down inside, she's not really as good as she said. And when Sarah sees this, so she attacks Avram. She says, I'm upset at you. I gave you my maid, and once she saw she became pregnant, she starts treating me lightly. Hashem will judge between me and you. And Avram tells Sarah, take her. She's your maid. Do whatever you think is right. And Sarah tortures her. She makes her do hard work. She makes her work in the kitchen. Anyone who knows pregnant women have a very hard time smelling baked meat and smelling different stuff cooking. And Hagar runs away. Amalek finds her and tells her, look, you're the maid of Sarah. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? So the second she sees that the guy recognizes her, so she tells the truth. She says, I'm running away from Sarah. And the Malach, the angel, tells her, go back, you'll be tortured, but in the end, you're going to have great offsprings, a tremendous number. Call your son Yishmael, for Hashem has listened to your sorrow, and he's going to be a wild man. He's going to attack everyone, everyone's going to attack him. Avil Dechaya, right? He's going to be like a wild animal, like a wild mule. And she goes back. She gives birth, and Avram calls the son Yishmael, just like the Malach had told her that she should call the son Yishmael, but Avram ultimately called him. Avram was 86 years old. So if everything's written in direct chronological order, everything we read until now was up to 86 years old, the next parsha. And this is basically the end. Avram is 99 years old, and God tells him, I want you to be whole. I'm going to give you my covenant, my treaty, and I'm going to teach you how you have to make a bris, cut off the foreskin, and then you're going to be a father of many nations, not only of the people of Aram. You're no longer going to be called Avram, you're going to be called Avraham, and with this you're going to be a complete person, and after this you're going to have a child, once you take off that foreskin. And I'll make you have a lot of kids, and a lot of kings, and a lot of nations will come out of you. This is my covenant between you, me and you, and your children forever. I am your God, and this is the treaty between me and you. And God teaches Avram how to make a bris, and tells him at 8 days old, you have to do a bris. And the same thing, your servants, you have to give them a bris, to cut off the foreskin, to circumcise. And if someone doesn't, then they'll get cut off from the Jewish people. God tells Avram, change your wife's name as well. She's no longer going to be called Sarai, she's going to be called Sarah, and you're going to have a child from her. So Avram is 99. And he tells God, what do you mean? At 100 years old, I'm going to have a child, and Sarah at 90 years old, will she have a child? Maybe Yishmael's enough. And God tells him, no. Sarah's going to have a child, and call him Yitzchak. And I'm going to set up my treaties. It's going to come true between me and him. And Yishmael, okay, I hear your request, so I'm going to bless Yishmael. He's going to grow. He's going to have 12 Nisim, 12 great leaders, and he's going to be a great nation. But my treaty is going to be with Yitzchak. A year from now, Sarah is going to give birth to a child, call him Yitzchak, and that's the one who I'm going to do the treaty with. Avram takes Yishmael, all his servants, gives them all a bris milah. Avram's 99 years old, and he cuts the foreskin himself. And his son Yishmael was 13 years old. In the middle of the day, Avram wasn't scared. He did it in front of everyone. And that's how the parasha ends. Avram does a bris for himself, for his son, and all his servants. Now let's go over the parasha, adding a little bit more from Chazal. God shows up to Avram, and he tells him, Lech Lecho, get out of this land. We mentioned already in last week's parasha, or on Sunday we mentioned that this is difficult because it seems like Avram left the land. Then the parasha Snoch, it seems like he left. So Chazal tell us that this prophecy, God tells Avram, go, get out of this land. This prophecy he received inside the burning furnace. If you recall, Avram was thrown into a burning furnace for defying the great Nimrod, the greatest ruler, the king who had conquered the world and told everyone that he is God and everyone should bow down to him. So Avram defied Nimrod, and as a punishment, he was supposed to be thrown into a burning furnace. When he was thrown in, he came out alive. When he was in that burning furnace, God told him, get out of here. Time to leave this land. So Avram would think, gee, it's true. The way they're treating me, I better get out of here. God tells him, Lech Lecha, you're going for you. I'm commanding you, but it's for your sake. Things are going to go good if you get out of here. So sometimes we have in the Torah that the Torah describes a scene, and then it goes back and gives us details. So then the last six parashah, we have the description of how they left. They left with the father, and then the father stopped off at Haran, and Avram's going to continue to the land of Canaan alone without his father. And this week's parasha takes us back to where did this all begin with? This prophecy began, our sages tell us, Rav Sadigon quotes this, that this prophecy was really given in that burning furnace. We often think that we're doing God a favor, so to speak. Maybe I'll eat that chocolate bar. But it's not a good hechsher. Maybe I'm not even sure if it has a hechsher. Okay, God, this one's for you. What do you mean this one's for you? So we say, do the mitzvahs for the sake of God. That doesn't mean that I'm doing God a favor. Doing myself a favor. God told me the best way I could live here. So sometimes we have to feel, okay, God told me I'm going to do it. But we have to recognize that I'm not doing anyone any favors. God tells Avram, go for your sake. True, it's going to be hard. Avram was given 10 tests. We know Asar Nisyonos Nisnas Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was given 10 tests, and he shone. In every test, he succeeded. And next week, we're going to elaborate on what the idea of a test is. Why did God test Avram? But this week, I don't think we'll go into it. Some are of the opinion that the most difficult test was this one, to start traveling. Traveling and traveling and traveling and traveling, and he can't rest. And he doesn't know when he's going to rest. And he's told, go north, go south. He reaches the land of Canaan. There's a famine. He has to go down to Egypt. No one knows him. His wife is kidnapped. She's taken to the king. He doesn't know what's going to happen to her. This woman is so modest that her husband never recognized how beautiful she was. He was so modest, Avram, that he never recognized he has a gorgeous wife that everyone looks at her in the street. Avram doesn't realize this. He enters the land of Egypt. What happens to these two immensely modest people? The worst possible thing that could happen to modest people. She's taken to a king, a filthy Mitri, Egyptian king, and from her perspective, it was like a tarantula crawling over her. Last thing in the world she wanted to do was to be with this defiled creature. And there she is. So he never had relations with her because God punished him right away. But here Avram's standing. God, you told me to come to the land of Israel. From the time the world was created, there was never a famine in the world. Now Avram listens to his creator. He comes to the land of Israel. Bam, there's a famine. There was never such a concept as a famine before. The first famine that happened in history happened here. Avram enters land of Israel, there's a famine. And not only was this the first famine in history, in world history, but it didn't affect any other land. Go to the north of Israel, everything's fine. Go to the west, everything's fine. East, everything's great. Go south to Egypt, they're flourishing. Avram enters the land of Canaan. God told him to come, and things go south. That's the way life is. We grow up with fairy tales. We think, I'll do what's right and everything will be sweet. It doesn't work that way. You did what's right, so God's going to test you. Let's see you do better. It's not enough you did what's right. Do what's right and see that things aren't going to be sweet and continue doing what's right. So Avram comes to the land of Israel and he thinks, okay, God told me. I lived up to the test, which according to some opinions was the most difficult test. More difficult than the test to bring his son up on an altar. I don't understand it, but that's what, there is such an opinion. And when he lives up to that test, suddenly he has another test. Okay. So we have to remember, if we wanted life to be easy, we could climb on a tree, take a banana, peel it, and be monkeys, right? But we're not here to be monkeys. We have a job in this world. And our job is to grow spiritually and to live up to the test that we're given. And part of the test is the fact that it's not going to be pleasant, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be fun. And it's always going to hit us in the sore points. On the points where we think, hey, this is what I'm doing right. If this is what I'm doing right, why is this hurting? Avram was a modest person. Sarah was an immensely modest person. And you think, why should they get punished with this? She's taken to this filthy king's house forcibly? What's going on? Avram doesn't question. God said so. God's running the world. Okay. The whole world seems to disagree with him. It's called Avram HaIvri. Why Ivri? Aver is the side. The whole world was on one side and Avram was on the other side. He's a rebel. He's saying there is one God. You don't see him, but he's there. Stop serving those idols. And he believes in that God. And he gets prophecy from that God. But then everything seems to go wrong. Didn't go wrong. That's what God wants. We don't understand it. Okay.
God never told him to go to Egypt. And
that's true.
Ramban also says that's measure for measure. That's why we were exiled in Egypt.
Okay. That's one understanding. Okay. When Avram traveled, it said he took with him esanefesh asher asu v'chara. He took with him the souls that they made in Chara. So our sages tell us, what does it mean they made a soul? If the whole world unifies together and tries to create one mosquito, they can't do it. We can't create life. We don't know how. So what does it mean they made souls in Chara? The way you make a person is by teaching him the proper way to live. If you teach a person, you educate him, you teach him the way to be a proper person. Avram and Sarah told the people there is one God, and he told us how to live in this world, and we have to be moral people, and we can't burn our kids as sacrifices. We can't be serving these crazy idols that they're telling us and light up our kids in fire and offer sacrifices from our kids and think that we're being pious people. That's not the way we're supposed to live in this world. So that's called making a person. Yeah?
At a certain point, he has already a difficulty in saying, want to follow Hashem and you try to trust him, everything goes wrong. Who's because you don't know exactly, did I do this wrong? You have to check out again. But for Avram, it's at that point, I think, quite difficult to check out how to trust in Hashem if he doesn't understand really. The next thing might be wrong also. You know, he has to tell it to this new converts also. Like, if you start to live with Hashem, everything will be difficult.
Well, I think what he's telling them is this is the proper way to live.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen as a result of it. Believe in Hashem. And there is one God and He's running the world. And what will happen? Will He make me rich? Maybe yeah, maybe no. Will He make me healthy? Maybe yeah, maybe no. I don't think Avram came with promises. No. Go in the right way and things will go good.
Well, yeah.
No, but
go for yourself.
More like ethics, like, okay, live good, don't sacrifice your children.
Try
to believe in this. These people had belief in idols and gods, so they tried to believe up to some concept.
From the beginning.
Yeah, but he was saying the basics of what you're believing is false. There is no such a God. Now, what does my God demand out of you? I don't know. I have a tradition, 7 commandments, don't eat flesh from a live animal, don't kill one another, set up a court system, don't steal from one another. I have a basic system, don't serve idols. Does he want anything else? I don't think Avram taught them anything else. It's possible. Our sages say he kept Pesach, he kept Shabbos, he kept a lot of things. But simply understood, reading the Pesukim without Chazal, seems like he was telling them, don't go in the way of these idols, because it's a lie.
Yeah.
And I think that was the main thing. Mm-hmm. Don't serve them. How do you serve God? We have the basic commandments. I'm not sure he taught them beyond that.
I'm shocked. I only say it's quite difficult for these new souls then to start it, to trust also.
Oh yeah, very difficult, yeah. It seems, we'll see. How many people did he have in total? 300 and something. Didn't seem like they doesn't have tens of thousands. For sure it was hard.
But God did tell him, go for yourself, go for your good.
Okay, that's when you have a prophecy, and God tells you, you go, it'll be good. Even
then. Good, right, if it wasn't that good. Though.
It was good. Mm. It turned out good. Good doesn't mean it's not difficult.
Right. But the thing is, if how could we know that Avram tried his hardest to survive in a land that had a famine. Like, the question is, like, he never told him to go to Egypt, so like maybe Avram didn't really pass the first test.
So if we were the ones who were interpreting Torah, we might say that, but we have a tradition, and we have our sages who have tradition how to understand it. It's true. I don't know why they said this way as opposed to that way. Maybe because from the Pesukim we see that God approved of it, but I don't know. I agree. I don't know from where Chazal learned it out, if not that they had a tradition that Avram did right by going to Egypt. There was no command to go there. Okay? It seems like sometimes we're supposed to understand on our own what to do. I mean, sometimes part of the test is no one's going to tell you. And you're supposed to have developed the correct instincts to react correctly. That's what it seems like.
It still bothers me when I... Trying to get through I'm going through a Ramban and going through Rashi just to try to figure that one out. Why did he go to Egypt?
Well, he understood he's not going to succeed here. I think it was something that he understood. It was on his level he understood that at this point, what does God want from me? To die here of famine?
Well, obviously that's what he did.
Yeah, it seems like he reached the point where he didn't have money, because on his way to Egypt we know he had debts. When he came back with all the wealth, it says he retraced the steps to pay back all his debts. So that means he stayed in Israel until he was at a point that he had to take loans already. He left going to Egypt. He was going in debt. He was saying, I'll pay you back. And he was a famous person. They believed him. They knew he'd be wealthy. They knew he'd make okay. But he took loans. Paro takes Sarah. Who is Paro? Who are the Egyptians? The Egyptians are the most incestuous people there are. The Navi constantly tells us about how they are not faithful to their wives, how their children are mamzerim, how there are people who are constantly focused on taking women, and that's what they do when Avram enters the land of Egypt. Paro gets punished. He becomes a leper or something of the sort. His wives, his children... Even the babies, just as they were born, they start getting punished, and Paro realizes what's going on, so he tells Avram, what'd you do to me? Why didn't you tell me she's your wife? Take her and go, because Paro knows if they're going to stick around, then my people are no better than I am. They'll grab his wife from him. So they send Avram, and Avram goes back, and we said he pays back. Now Lot was smart. He went with Avram. And we have a rule, Oleches Chachamim, one who goes with wise people, Yechkam will himself become smart. So Lot goes with Avram. All the time Avram saying, she's my sister, she's my sister. Lot knows really she's my sister. She's not his sister. Avram's getting all these gifts because he's saying she's my sister. So God says, Lot, you kept quiet. What's Lot's weak point? Lot loves money. So Lot sees Avram getting all the money by saying she's my sister. And Lot keeps quiet, even though she's really his sister. Lot could have given everything away. Avram would get killed. Lot would get all the gifts. And okay, Lot keeps quiet. So Lot gets a reward. What's his reward? He gets wealthy as well. They come back, and there's a fight between their shepherds. What's the fight? Lot's shepherds say, it's our land. God said he's giving it to Abraham. And Avram's shepherds say, what do you mean? God said he'll give it to Abraham. Means it's ours now. We can't take it. Right now, these people own it. These people own it. If we let our sheep graze on their lands, we're stealing. Notice, if we look at this argument on the side, it would seem who's more religious? Lot's shepherds are more religious. They're saying, what do you mean? You don't believe? God said it's going to be Abraham's. Lot is Abraham's nephew. Abraham doesn't have any offspring, so Lot's going to inherit it all. So of course we could have it. You don't believe? God said it's going to be his. Very frum people. Sometimes by being very frum, a person could be a gun. A person could do the worst thing and claim, oh, I'm very frum. I'm doing it because I really believe. We have to remember that. And Abram's shepherd said, yeah, God said it. Obviously, we believe it. Abram will still have an offspring, and Lot won't inherit him. And anyways, we don't have it now. It wasn't given to us now. Abram sees this, and he says, why should there be a fight? Now, Lot was almost an identical twin to Abram. He looked very, very similar to Abram. And Lot saw the great land of Sodom and Amorah, and he saw that they served idols, and he saw that they had Gilui Arayis. They weren't keeping the laws of not marrying one sister, one's daughter. They were having incestuous relationships. Lot saw that they were stealing. They were murderous people. But you know what? You can make good money there. So he went there. The people of Sodom, our sages tell us, were very wicked people. And we're going to discuss that at greater length next week. For Lot to go and live with the Sodomites, there's a reason why we call it acts of sodomy today. They did terrible, terrible acts to one another, to their guests. And Lot said, yeah, but they, I won't live with them. I'll just live next to them. And then his tents extended till the city. He had a lot of wealth. And eventually, we're going to see that, look what happened. Once Lot leaves, God tells Avram, look around. Even where Lot is sitting, that's all going to be yours. Don't think Lot's getting anything. You're going to have a lot of kids like the dirt of the ground. We know that sometimes the Jewish people were compared to the dirt of the ground, and sometimes they were compared to the stars in heaven. And this week's Parsha. Because when we go down to the dust. When the Jewish people were down, everyone stepped on them. When the Jewish people go up, they go up like the stars. Both things happen to the Jewish people. But the Rambam says, even though till the time that things get better, we look like the dust, the world has to remember that we're like the dust. Man spends his whole life stepping on the dust. And when he dies, he gets buried in the dust, and the dust is on top of him. So he said, that's the Jewish people. People spend their whole life stepping on them. But in the very end, we're like the dust. They're going to be decomposed in us. They're going to be destroyed, and we're eternal. Now Nimrod is also called Amraphel, because Amraphel is short for Amar Behipil. He said, and he caused Avram to fall. Lipol is to fall. Amraphel, Amar Behipil is Avram. He caused Avram to fall into the burning furnace. And he decreed that everyone has to serve himself as an idol. He had a problem, because Avram was teaching people, that's all nonsense. There's one God, he created the world, and he doesn't demand any of Nimrod's nonsense from you. So Amraphel gathered with him three other kings, and he wanted to go fight a war to get Avram. Now there are different opinions in the Medrash. Last time we went through this, a few minutes ago, we explained this whole war differently, if you recall. This time we're explaining it according to a different Medrash. Some say that he knew he couldn't stand up against Avram. So he said, you know what I'll do? I'll capture his nephew, Lot. And Lot looks just like Avram. And I'll tell everyone, you see, I'm stronger than God. I captured God's man on earth. Here's Avram. And I'll show them Lot. And they'll all think I captured Avram. That's one understanding. Another understanding says that Nimrod said, I'm going to go take that Avram down because he's ruining my kingdom. People are learning from him to stop worshiping, to stop worshiping idols. That's no good. So he gets these three kings to come with him, and he attacks. He comes from the north, mainly from the east. He comes from the area where the Babylonian Empire is, from Iraq. He's coming from the east, and he's attacking Israel. Sodom, Amorah, those are kingdoms in Israel. On his way, so he has these five kings who rebelled against him, aren't paying taxes. And on his way, he knows there's that famous nephew of Abraham's, Lot. So on his way, he goes to pick up Lot, destroys Sodom and Amorah and the other five kings, the other three kings, and he continues to attack Avram. Avram gets word, someone runs from the camp and warns Avram, hey, your nephew is being captured. Who ran away? So one shot is, okay, someone managed to get away. Another understanding says it was Og. He wanted Avram to go to war, and then Avram will die. He can't live up to against four kings, and then he'll take his beautiful wife Sarah. Another understanding says it was the great angel Gavriel, who is sometimes called the one who flees. Either way, Avram takes a chase. He hears his nephew's been captured, and he runs after them. He takes his students, Chanichov, 318, which is the gematria of Eliezer. Some say he only took Eliezer, his top disciple. Who was Eliezer? Eliezer was Nimrod's son. When Nimrod threw Avram into the burning furnace, so Nimrod saw Avram walks out alive. So he himself felt like he had to reward Avram. So he gave him Eliezer, he gave him his son Eliezer as a slave. Now you'll note that we're going to discuss Eliezer many times in this week's parsha, next week's parsha, and the following parsha. Eliezer's name only shows up once in the whole Torah in this week's parsha. Every other time we discuss the slave, and our sages tell us that's referring to Eliezer. But Eliezer by name is only identified in this week's parsha. And where is he identified? He's identified when Avram's complaining. He's saying, God, you told me I'm going to be wealthy. You told me you'll give me blessing. What's it all worth when I don't have a son? And the one who will inherit me is the one, Damascus Eliezer. Eliezer who comes from Damascus. Eliezer who comes from Nimrod. That's the only time we encounter the name Eliezer. Even over here, Chazal say, it says he took 318. 318 is the gematria, the numerical value of the word Eliezer, and it means he took Eliezer. And he chased after the four kings. The night he chased after them was the night of Passover, the night of Pesach, the 14th of Nisan, the night that became the 15th of Nisan. And he gives chase. What's he going to chase them with? So our sages tell us, we have a tradition that he threw sand at them. And the sand turned into spears and knives. And every time he threw sand, that sand killed them. The king of Sodom, well, he defeated them. And he released his nephew, Lot, and the women, and the rest of the nation. And the king of Sodom came out towards him. Now, when he went to war, he killed out a lot of Noah's grandchildren. Noah had a son, Shem, and that son, Shem, had a lot of children. He had a son who had there were a lot of generations. That great-great-grandfather was still around. And his great-great-grandchildren had composed one of the nations that Avram went to war against. Now, he was also Avram's great-great-grandfather. When Avram came back from war, so he was considered the king of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is called Tzedek, the city of justice. He was called Malki Tzedek, the king of Tzedek. And he was considered the high priest because he was the Rosh Yeshiva. He was the one who was teaching Torah. He was teaching people. It was known he had a base medrash. That's where you learn. If you want to learn how to serve God, he was the old Rebbe, Malki Tzedek, or Shem, the son of Noah. And Avram also learned by him probably. So when Avram comes back from the war, the high priest Malki Tzedek comes towards him. What does it mean, a priest? I mean, there was no temple at the time, but it means he was the chief Rebbe. He was the one who guided people how to serve God. And he came out and he greeted Avram with bread and wine. Avram's coming back from a war. And he blesses Avram and he says, blessed is Avram to God in heaven, who koneh shamayim v'aretz. God is the one who acquired, we'll translate for now, or who created the heavens and the earth. And this is the first time we encounter the term that God is koneh shamayim v'aretz. We use that term in Shmoneh Esrei, right? What does it mean God acquired? No one else owned it before God. God created. So here we see that the term kone could mean either to create or to have ownership by virtue of the fact that one made them. Either kone means to have ownership or it means to make. And that's what it means in Kriya Shema also. In Shemona Esrei also. It doesn't mean to acquire. After he blesses Avram, he says, and blessed is the great God who gave over your enemies into your hand. Malki Tzedek blessed Avram before he blessed God. Malki Tzedek, when he said, you defeated my great-great-grandchildren, felt badly against Avram, and he used a term that was foul when one describes God's actions. He said, Asher migain tzorecha biyodecha. God gave over, like, God abandoned my offsprings in your hand. God let you take them over. So he was upset. He just lost a lot of great-great-grandchildren. But at the same time that he was upset, he used the wrong term when he was speaking about God. And at this point, Malki Tzedek lost his right to be the high priest, and Avram, it was decreed in heaven, would be the high priest instead of him. And Avram, at that point, gave Malki Tzedek a tenth of everything, because we know that we're supposed to give a tenth of the money we earn, we give to tzedakah today. So Avram gave it to Malki Tzedek. We're out of time.